If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life, been grinding
Welcome
all my life.
Welcome to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. No Facebook Live today, but guess what? Big news. Darren is in the office. He's in studio today.
Yeah.
This is a good feeling. I missed you.
Missed you too, man. I mean, it's not like we haven't seen each other, but personally being able to touch, dab, all that good stuff, man.
Look, I mean, we got a huge glass screen between us, but still.
That is true. Look, I'm just as excited as Doris Burke is hard. So, you know, that lets you know just how happy I am to see you right now.
Doris Burke, the...
She is the MVP of the NBA.
She is.
At least commentating, she is.
And Richard Jefferson. I loved Richard Jefferson's commentary. He was fantastic, too.
I don't listen to him. I just listen to Doris. I tell you, you know, well, I listen to Doris, and I listen to Jeff Van Gundy.
It was Van Gundy and Jefferson, and I was like, this is a hell of a lineup. I will listen to these guys. Throw Doris Burke in there, and you have yourself a squad.
Gosh. Yeah. Better than Chris Webber.
Yeah. Chris Webber's maybe the worst. I feel bad for him. Like, I like him. Like, I liked watching him play growing up, but I can't do
it. But, you know, I will say before we go further that I felt sorry for Mark Jackson because I think one night last week it sounded like he was calling the game by himself. And I know what that is like when I was at Lincoln University, calling a college basketball or football game by yourself where you have to do color and play-by-play. It is not a good feeling. And really, to be quite honest, that's the reason why I don't like to host a show by myself because, you know, I could have done the Rush Limbaugh style, but yeah. because of that experience, going week in, week out, all the work that you put in trying to do a football or basketball game, and basketball, obviously, it's more repetitive versus every week with football. Trying to get all it together and then keeping people's attention for 3 hours. Mind you, now, I'm doing play-by-play and color, and then at halftime, depending on where we were at, if it was a black college football game, then – you know, I let the bands do the halftime stuff. But if it wasn't, but then even then, I would bring like the college president from the opposing school that we would play and have them in and be, you know, doing interviews with them. So I never really had like a break, so to speak. And it was, it messed with my head badly where I never, from then on, if I ever do a sports show, whatever, I'm not doing it by myself. I'm just not doing it.
At least it wasn't soccer or baseball. Talk about how much dead time in between pitches, in between goals. Oh, dude, that would be brutal.
Here's the thing. I wanted to do that when I was in college. I was doing a lot of live streaming. I was one of the first to actually start doing it. This was back in 2002, 2003, so I was one of the first in the country to start streaming games and stuff online. It got to the point where CBS wanted me to come up for our National Division II Track and Field Championships, but, you know, had some hating going on back at the school. But all that being said, when I was doing that, it was one of those things where I literally wanted to just be able to just stream the baseball game so I could just sit back and just watch because I like baseball. We're going to talk about it a little bit later on today. But, yeah, dude, you know, 2.5-3 hours of baseball and call it work when I'm, you know, was working for the school. Oh, man, I loved it.
Nothing wrong with that. A lot of stuff to get, though, into today. Eric Fisher, J.J. Watt, Hunter Dozier. But I think first let's go with Brett Veach because Brett Veach had some – very surprising words. He gave an injury update, which is very weird to say an injury update in the middle of, or yes, the start of March. But he had an injury update, and this is what he had to say.
I'm just looking at my medical notes here. So Pat had his toe surgery on 2/10. You know, talking to Rick late last week, it's a 3-month recovery. So we're hopeful, you know, somewhere around that mandatory mini camp, if we have, you know, we certainly think by training camp he'll be good to go, and we'll be smart with him. Mitch just recently had his disc worked on, and we're hopeful for him to return to training camp, and the same thing with Fish. So we're hopeful both these guys will, you know, complete the rehab and be available for training camp and to start the 2021 season. I would probably say Pat's ahead of them just because of the that type of injury and probably a quicker recovery. but hopeful to have all three ready to go by training camp.
I mean, the biggest surprise was Fisher. You know, no surprise with Mahomes. Zero surprise, I think, with Schwartz. I think that's a good thing. I think everyone's happy that we finally have some clarity that week one should be he's there, but he should be back for training camp. But Eric Fisher, was that a surprise to you?
It was. I was on the Zoom call along with Seren and Lebo. And, you know, that did catch us all off guard. I know Sam Mellinger had to come back like, hold on, did you say August? You know, and because when we talked about it last week, I'm like, that's a one-year injury. And I know there have been players who have come back sooner, Adrian Peterson, Derek Johnson. But, again, everybody heals differently. And I'm thinking for an offensive lineman, because of the weight and the girth, you know, you're talking about someone with that type of injury who's going to have to stay off the leg, it seems, that you would think.
Yeah.
You know, but, well, I don't want to say but, because I'm looking at, because he had an ACL or Achilles.
His was his Achilles.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that's what Kevin Durant had. And so Kevin Durant was out for a year or so. And so, granted, they're different players in different sports. He's 7 feet tall versus 200 pounds.
6'9". They're still big dudes.
Yeah, but I'm thinking 200 pounds versus 300 to where, like you said, the weight that you're carrying on it. And then if you're not on it, you know, you're overcompensating with the other leg when you start training, trying to rehabilitate and stuff like that. So the fact that he said it and was pretty – he tried to pull it back some, you know, when he kind of got pressed on a little bit. But, you know, according to Rick, you know, according to the Chiefs trainer, they're believing that the way he got the surgery done and stuff that, I mean, they're looking at an August time, which – look, if you're Patrick Mahomes, you're good, which also makes if you're Brett Veach, makes the offseason, I don't want to know if it's, I don't want to say it's challenging, but it does make you wonder, because if you're going to have both of your right and left tackle back before the start of this football season, do you go different direction now in the offseason? I know you're still going to be looking to get get some backups, but now you don't feel like you may be as hard pressed and getting them back now, but you also have to worry about the contract situation. How do you go about kind of readjusting, because you're looking at bringing them both back?
Yeah.
So if you're going to do that, then you got to make sure that you do some stuff to get under the cap, which I know we'll talk about shortly.
So this makes Brett Veach's life so much easier. You only have to – originally we thought, okay, Mitchell Schwartz is back. That's fantastic. Now it's only one tackle, and maybe it's for 8 to 10 weeks. But now it may not even be any weeks. You have to go without looking for a experienced or someone to protect Pat's blind side. You thought maybe Lucas Niang would get a crack, but now he can be thrust into that backup role, that versatile role. And if you bring Mike Remmers back, now he's not starting, and he's back into his original role with Kansas City, where he's a interim replacement, which he's fine.
He has that experience from being a starter.
Yeah. And I mean, again, who knows what Mike Remmers is going to get on the open market? I don't know if it's going to be. Some team saw that and says, you know what? We could live with him as a right guard or a right tackle as a starter. But he fits his Kansas City mold as far as that versatile, do-it-all guy. It's like Cam Irving if Cam Irving was good. That's what Mike Remmers is. But you brought this up, and I want to play it. He was pressed about Eric Fisher because I think everyone was caught off guard. And this is what Brett Veach had to say about Eric Fisher when pressed.
Yeah, I think look at my notes right here. Achilles surgery, 129. You know, based on Rick and his medical staff, he projects a mid-August return. So now, listen, how that works. You know, everything is different, and everyone recovers differently. So, you know, I think with that injury and you know, with the time leading up for the season, you know, Rick has here a mid-August return. And you know how that works. That's all always, you know, to be determined until the player actually reports back to camp and goes through the offseason and see where he is. But I think that, you know, the mid-August timeline was put in front of my notes here. So, you know, I'll defer to Rick on that and trust his medical expertise.
Yeah, no, he's when he said that, I was like, okay. And it got me thinking, listening to it again, that even though you're looking at mid-August, the way that the Chiefs operate, unless he's out there really returning, I think he would return at least, depending on how the schedule unfolds, where the Chiefs bye week is. I think knowing the way that the Chiefs operate, I don't think we see him in week one of the NFL starting lineup. If he's got a mid-August return, I just don't. It's just hard for me to see them thrusting him in that place. Now, again, you know, because you can kind of maybe have Lucas Niang there,
sure, yeah,
you know, to kind of start out, and then depending on how he plays, maybe you move him over or if Fisher is healthy, then you just put him in. But
yeah,
I just listening to that once again, even though a mid-August return is what they're shooting for. Okay, he returns mid-August, but what form is he going to be in?
Yeah. I mean, though, this is still such a best-case scenario after all of the doom and gloom, because it could have been both guys either retiring, out for the season. This is a very good situation for Brett Veach to be in. I don't know if Eric Fisher is going to get his contract restructured because, again, if they were to cut him, it was $12 million. But if he's going to be back week one, you're not cutting him. You saw how valuable he was.
But you're extending him. I mean, you've got to extend him.
You'd switch it. Yeah, you'd find a way to ease up on this one-year contract, maybe extend it, front-load it, back-load it. Do what you have to do to get under the cap. But this is a very good situation for Kansas City to be in. I think most fans are probably going to be less doom and gloom now, because after the Super Bowl, everyone was upset, and rightfully so, with that offensive line. But now you're getting your guys back. You have Lucas Niang coming back. You have LDT coming back. That's four guys you didn't have in the Super Bowl returning or coming back. That's huge already.
What I like listening to Brett Veach, and again, I know in the second segment we'll venture over to baseball and Dayton Moore. it got me thinking, and I was listening to Dayton Moore. I was on a Zoom call with Dayton a little bit later when they were talking about Hunter Dozier. And I had to sit back just in my seat, and I'm looking like Kansas City's real fortunate right now to have Brett Veach and Dayton Moore in their respective positions as the GM of those respective teams. They both, literally, they're both in the same scenario, just opposite years, where the Royals lost the World Series, turned around and won it. Chiefs won a Super Bowl, turned around and lost it. So they both know the agony of defeat and the thrill of success. And they know. Now, baseball is obviously different because of salary cap and sure, the structure, stuff yeah, like that, versus what the Chiefs are able to do, because there's no salary cap in baseball, but you're a small market team. But now you got a billionaire owner who's got the deep pocket that's willing to sign players and put the product out there. And I told you last couple of weeks, Royals are in the win now thing. They're trying to put stuff together on the field to compete now. And I know, but I said it to say that I like that mentality, and that's what you see from both Dayton Moore and Brett Veach in the manner and how they approach the job, because he was able to look at what they did in the Super Bowl and acknowledge, their shortcomings and their shortfalls, and address, like, we know what we need to address in this offseason to try to, because he said, you know, what I expect them to say, but they expect and they hope to get back to Los Angeles next year for Super Bowl 13, because it's one thing to where you haven't played in the Super Bowl for 50 years, and it's another, you know, you get to AFC Championship game, you lose it, but then you got back-to-back Lamar Hunt trophies, which stamps you a ticket to the Super Bowl. So, you know, they like that idea. They like the idea of, hey, let's win, you know, and look, everybody wants to win a Super Bowl, but for the Chiefs, their first thing is, let's win that Lamar Hunt trophy one, because it's the father, yeah, you know. Yeah. So you win that first, then you put yourself in a position to win the Super Bowl.
Does this change, how much does this change, I guess, for Brett Veach? Because does this mean you maybe don't bring back a veteran guy? Maybe you don't go and trade for Orlando Brown? Maybe you draft a raw guy in the third round? Because you have Lucas Niang, obviously, but still, you have two tackle spots you need to think about in the near future. This isn't just okay, now they're back, they're going to be good for another 5 years. You still got to look at the future of maybe 2 or 3 years filling both spots. You hope Niang can take one.
I'm going to be honest, up until this morning, I was all for the trade, you know, get out that 31st pick and see if you can get that for Orlando Brown, but he wants to play left tackle. The problem is, obviously, Eric Fisher's not going to want to switch to right tackle or left guard or anything like that, even if he comes back, and again, we don't know what percentage he's going to be, but then, you know, but that's a situation that you'd have to kind of rectify or try to get under control, because Orlando Brown is much younger, and he's going to be here much longer than Fisher is, and so that's a tough one as it relates to what you do with him, because I was all for that, not knowing the timetable for Fisher, because I'm thinking it's going to be a year, yeah, and he's not going to come back till the playoffs or even you know, or even if at all. Now, the one thing is you don't want to have a situation where you you Eric Berry this guy because come no yeah. seriously because
no, no,
because come mid August, I know Sam, Herbie, me, everybody's gonna be like, you said mid August, where is he at? Why is he not out? You know, so what's the time frame? I mean, so that's. You know, shout out to Brett Veach for putting himself out there like that. But
yeah, he put himself out there because if anything goes wrong or if Eric Fisher has a setback or isn't out there, Brett Veach has some questions. He put – I don't want to say Eric –
Or Rick Burkholder as well.
Well, yeah, but I will say I appreciate the transparency that Brett Veach gave everyone. He wasn't saying we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
He actually gave a timeline. And this is a long timeline out, obviously, but he gave a timeline. Not many GMs do this.
Well, not only did he give a timeline, he gave Chiefs fans hope. I mean, seriously, because again, I'm not expecting Eric Fisher back, but you're saying August and Mitchell Schwartz, you're talking about his back, you know, with the surgery and stuff, he'll be
Week
back,
one,
you know.
Training camp.
And so I'm like, bro, that's, look, man, maybe he'll come back stronger, healthier than ever. So if that's the case, I'm all for it. But, you know, you putting that out there, you're going to be giving Chiefs fans a lot of false hope if it's if that's not true.
I guess this also takes pressure off him to draft a ton of offensive linemen early. If his guy's not there, this does give him a chance. Say if you're, just for example, say Leatherwood's your guy.
Mm.
Say that's who you want around this spot. You've marked him, but say he goes 29th overall. Now you don't have to draft a guy who you thought was maybe in the 40th range, and you can get your guy and then wait around and then maybe draft a tackle in the second round. This gives him more options to work with.
Yeah, because of how he put it out there today, I think the Chiefs go wide receiver with the first pick in the first round. Unless you find somebody from Clemson or Alabama that's just that good that hadn't, and I'm talking about on the line,
sure,
that hadn't been picked up yet or picked off yet, then I would go in that direction. Because to me, quite honest, you're paying a quarterback $500 million. There's not enough protection in the world that you can't go out there and draft. And look, the Chiefs have done well drafting these last few years, in my opinion. You know, and especially on the defense side of the ball, you know, they like to get corners and stuff deep in the rounds and stuff, and those corners participate, and those defensive players they contribute. That's the one thing about the Chiefs. The Chiefs will. Because a lot of teams do it. You obviously get late draft picks, and a lot of them don't make the team. The Chiefs are like, these are late draft picks. If our scouting department is as good as we believe it is, because that's what you're paying for, and if your coaching staff is as good as they have been training and teaching these players up, well, you're spending the money on them, and you got them on rookie deals. If they are anything close to what you expect them to be, you're getting a lot of bang for your buck, and you're not paying a lot of money for it, which means you can utilize the other money that you would normally spend on those type of players. You're able to spend them in more skilled positions.
Yeah, 100%. And you brought up wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Veach was asked about Sammy Watkins and what's it going to look like.
Yeah,
and here's what Brett Veach had to say about Sammy Watkins.
I've said it, you know, many times before, you know, love Sammy and love what he does for our offense. You know, there'll be challenges this year. It'll be a lot more challenging to retain him and bring him back this year just because of where we are. And, you know, we were able to work with him and his agent last year and make it work. You know, this year it'd probably be even more difficult just because we'll have some work to do to get into the cap. And once we do, we'll have to, you know, see where the markets go. It is interesting, Pete, as you mentioned, it's a pretty deep class in regards to free agency and that receiver position. And typically, like most years, there are numbers from top down in the receiver position in the draft. So, you know, I think we're certainly blessed to have, you know, Tyreek Hill and expecting big things out of Mecole Hardman this year. And I think we're all excited about the development of Myron Pringle. So we feel really good about those three players. And I think in free agency, you know, we'll be smart. And if something makes sense for us, we'll do what we do every year and listen. I can't see us running out of the gates the first week in free agency to sign a receiver. I don't think that's where we're at. But if the market falls and things make sense for us, I think we'll be smart and selective. And then, you know, if something doesn't work out in free agency, I think there's depth in that position to address it potentially in the draft.
That to me probably says don't hold out too much for an Allen Robinson coming to Kansas City. But what it does tell me is he obviously has a lot of confidence in Byron Pringle, because he went out of his way to bring up Byron Pringle. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he's a restricted free agent, so he needs to get re-signed. So
no, I think he's unrestricted, but when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I said that if you're the Chiefs, why would you not bring him back? I think he was only paid $540,000. So.
Sure, he'll get a raise.
A raise, but yeah, but obviously he's not, you know, we're not expecting
not breaking the bank.
Yeah, but it look, he's deserving of a raise. He's obviously
100%.
Deserving. And so, but again, talking about expecting big things out of Mecole Hardman, that's where, again, a lot of Chiefs fans are frustrated last year because you already know the cap situation and you already know the wide receiver situation where you're not bringing Sammy back. You're not bringing DeMarcus sure. Robinson back.
Well, did you hear that? He brought up Mecole, brought up Byron, talked about Sammy, no mention of D-Rob. But he could have said, we'll try to bring D-Rob back or say something. Well,
here's the thing. One, his name wasn't brought up because it was about Sammy.
Sure,
but what I'm saying is that he's an unrestricted free agent as well. And so I don't think he was paid a lot of money. I think he was paid a little bit. Either he was paid between $1 to $3 million.
Yeah.
And so again, it's not as though you can't bring him back because he wasn't being paid a whole lot of money compared to Sammy Watkins. So I mean, it's not really necessary to mention DeMarcus Robinson because if you only paid $1 million for him and you want to bring him back, you can give him $1.5 million and it'd be okay.
No, D-Rob is trying to get Chris Conley money.
No, I understand, but what I'm saying is that if he wanted to come back, knowing the cap situation, and because of the cap situation, which we'll play that clip in just a minute, you know, Brett Veach has some maneuvering that has to be done. He did talk about it. I don't think we have a clip because I think they asked about Tyrann Mathieu and his contract. Of course, this is his, as I said before earlier, his guaranteed money is already paid out because of these 2 years. So I said that the Chiefs could extend them. And then, you know, less and less than the cap burden. So I said, I'm on this stuff 2-3. I told you I can be a GM because I talked about this 2-3 weeks ago. But that being the case, if you're Brett Veach, the question is because I think the cap situation is going to settle around $182 million, down from $198.6 million. So that's something that, you know, and we talked a little bit about it last week about DeMaurice Smith telling the agents, you know, to go ahead and collude because he said that's what the owners are going to be doing anyway.
Yeah.
But we did get a chance, and I wanted to ask that question today to Brett Veach for, you know, another press conference the Chiefs wouldn't call on me. But what they didn't know is I had my question forwarded over to Nate Taylor from The Athletic, and this is what he had to say.
Brett, I'm sure you saw these comments, but DeMaurice Smith about a week ago gave the impression to agents that because of a, you know, truncated cap that maybe, you know, more than in previous years, agents should, you know, in essence, collude to not obviously get the best deals for their players. I'm just wondering from a team that already has its constraints with the salary cap and where it may go between now and the start of free agency, how do you navigate that when understanding that, you know, guys want to get the best deals for their players in terms of agents, but also you have to somehow structure it to work within the confines of the league in terms of maybe agents colluding more than usual?
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's difficult. And I think that, you know, the only thing that we can do or have the power to do is, you know, offer our position or contract and, you know, explain it and work with the agents in regards to what's possible. And there comes a point where certain things, because of the stress of the limited cap puts on the agent, the player, the organization, I think what we do is we exhaust every scenario and every possible way things can get executed. And if it happens to jive with the player and their agent, if it makes sense to them, then, you know, then it works. But there are limitations on what you can do. But I think our job is to just get creative as possible for players that we really want and, you know, work with them and try to find the middle ground. And you know, there's no easy answer to that question because it is every agent is different. Every player is different. Every scenario is different. I like to think, though, that once you can find a happy medium and find a middle ground that Kansas City and playing in front of this great fan base and playing with Pat Mahomes and playing for Andy Reid is certainly appealing. So I feel like half the battle is already won with what we have to offer in regards to playing here and having opportunity to play for Super Bowls and compete for titles. So the other part, you know, I'll defer and rely on Brant and Chris and getting creative and working for solutions to get these guys paid, maybe in unconventional ways, but they've done a great job of figuring out how to get that done.
Unconventional ways. I think to me, the funny part was not funny. Kansas City's in a good spot here because they can do this because they have maybe the best chance of going back to the Super Bowl. So some players may take pay cuts. But a lot of teams, if they're trying to lowball guys, say you're the Jets, say you're the Jags, and they try to lowball, ain't no chance someone's going to go and say, yeah, let me go take $4 million less or $2 million less per year to go up and play up in New York or play with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Chiefs can kind of do this. Most teams can't.
First of all, I'm going to say that was a hell of a question that was asked. So, you know, shout out to me for that one. But
shout out to Darren.
Yeah. But look, man, if you're Brett Veach, one, he answered it very delicately because, I mean, really, what really could he say as it relates to the collusion? Because they're going to do that. The Chiefs are going to collude with other teams because they're going to be trying to find out what other teams are offering said player or whatever, and then they're going to try to make that move on them, whether or not they want to either match it or come up underneath it and, you know, maybe stress to the player. But that being the case, look, man, it's a good point. I mean, I think it's going to happen. I think, as you mentioned, Kansas City is in a good position because you've gone to back-to-back Super Bowls and you've played you've hosted the AFC Championship game three times in a row. And obviously you're the team to beat in the AFC next year to get to Los Angeles. And that's where, look, everybody's going to want to go to that to get to the Super Bowl. So, you know, Brett Veach is in a good situation where players will be willing to take less money for an opportunity if they want an opportunity to try to win a Super Bowl. Obviously, you do have players on this team, as you mentioned, DeMarcus and others, who want that Chris Conley type money. But as I mentioned before, Sterling, is that they do have film on you, and they were able to see what you're able to do this season. Your numbers were down this year. I mean, when you had opportunity to stand, you know, to play in place of Sammy Watkins and others, did you step up? Did you put up big numbers? Did you do what you needed to do? Yeah. You know, and people say it's easy to play when you got Patrick Mahomes throwing you the ball, but you still got to make those plays. You still got to make the catch. You still got to do the yards after catch. You still got to try to get the ball in the end zone. If you didn't do it, because at the end of the day, they're going to go back and look at the film and see what you did in 2020. Not what you did in 2019 in the Super Bowl, but what did you do in 2019 in this pandemic year when you had injuries, when you had a chance to, you know, put up big numbers and big plays? Were you able to do it? Tyreek did it. Kelsey did it. But what did you do?
Yeah.
So, again, that's the thing. that's the beauty and the curse for playing with Patrick is that, you know, if you're Tyreek, you know, if you're Kelsey, you're going to get your catches, you're going to get your opportunities. But it's up to the other players when he's dishing the ball around, because Patrick will pass the ball around, you know, for you to be able to make the most of it. And if you're just catching it going to the ground, any receiver can do that.
To me, what will be beneficial to Kansas City is, like he said, they're not going to go out week one and try and bring in some big-name wide receivers. But if these players and the owners are colluding and trying to drive the price down, and it comes down to we want to sign somewhere, every team's offering us just below market value, am I going to sign with the Giants? Am I going to sign with the Broncos? Or am I going to sign with Kansas City? This works in Kansas City's favor, whether you think it's fair or not. If teams are colluding to lower these guys' market value, I don't think that's right. I don't think it's ethical. But it'd be naive to say that does not favor Kansas City.
No. I mean, in that regards and how you put it out there, yeah, it would work in Kansas City's favor. And look, like you talked about, they're not going to go out and sign a wide receiver. Hell, we can get J.J. Watt off the board right now because he's not coming to Kansas City any longer. I think he announced today he's going to sign with
Cardinals.
The Cardinals for 2 years, 23 – no, 30 – no.
$31 million, 23 guaranteed.
Over 2 years or 3 years?
2 years.
2 years, yeah. So
we'll get to that in a second. We'll take a quick break, and how about we come back, we'll talk some J.J. Watt, give you guys the breakdown on the J.J. Watt contract, and then we'll get into some Hunter Dozier in Royals baseball. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City.
Yeah. Check it out, baby. Make it hot, baby.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Ladies love Cool James.
That is true. I was not expecting that coming back from commercial.
I gotta keep you on your toes.
Yes, I look. I don't know who's listening right now, so I'm just going to say that song was the bomb in high school.
It was. I remember back when CDs were a thing. Remember CDs? Like when people
You remember cassette tapes.
Well, I did. That was my early child. See, that 8-tracks were before me. Yeah. I had cassettes. And then, but CDs were fantastic. And I remember having an LL Cool J CD, and that was awesome.
Yeah, LL Cool J. I remember those. Actually, those videos were even more iconic than the songs themselves. That's all I'm going to say. But speaking of iconic, your boy J.J. Watt signed a 2-year, $31 million, $23 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Look, it's interesting. It's interesting because we didn't know what kind of money he was going to expect on the open market, but they did say he was going to get between $15-16 million. That's what couple of teams, and the fact that unless you know something, because I know Cleveland thought that they'd have a good chance to sign him, and I thought it'd be interesting to see him play alongside Marcus Garrett or Miles Garrett, but then of course he'd have to go up against his brother in Pittsburgh twice a year, which
would have been fun though.
Yeah, it would have been fun, but I don't think the parents would have liked that too much. But now he's going to be in the NFC West. I'm not going to lie, I don't think it moves the needle at all with Arizona. I mean, I know. Look, I think his presence on the defense makes the defense better.
Yeah.
But that team is going to be led by its offense, and I just don't think that J.J. Watt is going to be that beneficial to the team's success.
Well, what is crazy, I'm with you. In my personal opinion, I don't think this necessarily makes the Cardinals some Super Bowl contender.
Right.
But I will say they now have the number one and number two sack leaders since 2012. Chandler Jones is number one with 97. J.J. Watt second with 95.5. I get it. These guys are older now. These guys aren't some young dudes, but they're still productive. They still have Patrick Peterson. Everyone kept saying that Patrick Peterson.
I thought they cut him. I thought they were letting him go.
Is that just now?
No,
recently.
I think they announced they were going to go separate ways.
I need to look into that.
Yeah.
Because as much as he struggled last year, Patrick Peterson, he's still a veteran dude. I was surprised he lasted that long. Arizona was surprising in that they didn't give up. They didn't just cut and trade their good players. They tried doing this rebuild while still trying to be competitive, whether they were or not. They at least try to keep some of their players. They bring in D-Hop. They bring in J.J. Watt. Chandler Jones is there. Kyler Murray. This is a legitimate playoff team. I'm not going to say contender, but they're a playoff team now. I think they are going to make – they're in a tough division, the NFC West. But I think they can make some noise. If Kyler Murray makes that next jump at quarterback – this is going to be a really good, complete team. Still, the offense will lead them, but this definitely helps shore up the defense.
Putting them together with Chandler Jones is going to make the defense better. I don't want to make it seem like his – because I did say his presence better, but I didn't say it would maybe make the overall team success better. Still think they're going to be led by the offense. But you got to remember, they also have Isaiah Simmons as well. Isaiah Simmons as their first-round draft pick, he fluctuated throughout the season with the team's success. I think he was instrumental in one of the victories that the team had, and I think it was against Buffalo, if I remember correctly, that he played well and helped the team win that ball game. Hopefully, Isaiah will be able to learn, how to play the game, because I know Isaiah can play on the line, he can play linebacker, he can play in the defensive backfield. So I know with his versatility, him being on there and learning under Chandler Jones and now being able to learn under J.J. Watt will only help him. And I'm singling him out because he's from the area.
Sure, yeah.
But I think J.J. Watt, I think it's a good addition for him. I just don't know, again, if it moves – because if the 49ers come back healthy and depend on – if they're able to get the shot. I mean, the 49ers got a whole lot of ifs to worry about.
But Rams in Seattle, I mean, those aren't even ifs.
I didn't got to them. Well, Seattle, we got to figure out what they're going to do with the quarterback situation, because
as long as Russ is there, and I think he's going to be there. I think they do not trade Russ. I don't think he leaves.
My only pushback to that is that when you start calling out the head coach who went to bat for you against the defense, against the Legion of Boom, and you're going after the coach as well as his sons, I don't know. And then you got to remember, who his wife is. His wife, you know, she gonna stand by her man now.
Yeah.
But who's to say that she's not pillow talking, hey, I want to get out of here, to where, you know, she wants to be in a bigger market. You know, I mean, sure. She is in the entertainment field. He obviously can't go to L.A. But, you know, Dallas, well, I think, what was it, the Jets and New Orleans. I mean, you know, those are better teams and franchises to at least the Saints are, to possibly get to a Super Bowl. But the other ones, Cowboys, But, again, Sierra, you know, he also wants to make her happy as well. Now, she's happy with that big contract extension that he signed, so she's not going.
I think Seattle will 1-2 step away from Pete Carroll before they do that with Russ.
I don't think so. I think Pete Carroll is almost like Bill Belichick, where he's kind of ingrained in there right now.
I get that. I mean, I think Pete Carroll's a hell of a coach. I do.
I think he is.
But I think in today's NFL landscape, it's much tougher to find a franchise Pillarstone quarterback than it is to find a good head coach.
Well, that's why they were talking about perhaps a Dag for Russ type deal. I don't see it happening because you got to get him on a contract. But, I mean, you know, Pete Carroll has done – you got to remember.
Sure.
That team is still, at the end of the day, if Pete Carroll gets his way, that team is going to be led by the defense and the running game. They just – I mean, I don't know. I could see them parting ways with Russ if they get something good offered for him.
It would have to be, again, it would have to be something Deshaun Watson-esque, and I think that's going to be too tough to come by. He already said he has no problem staying in Seattle. He didn't even say he wanted out. He just said...
Well, his agent said that. We didn't hear him say that. His agent said that.
I am surprised, though, by J.J. Watt's contract. That was a lot more expensive than I think most people thought. He didn't really join a contender. I mean,
he got something left in the tank, it shows.
Yeah. But, I mean, he said he wanted to join a contender. I think Arizona's a playoff contender. They'll contend for the playoffs, but I don't think they're contending for a Super Bowl this year, at least. That's my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see Kyler Murray and this defense, the team as a whole, taking this drastic jump from cusp to contention.
When you look at it, though, the question has to be, what other teams were really in the market for him that was in that price range?
Maybe Packers, Colts?
We did talk about the Colts, but did they make an offer?
Yeah, yeah. That's the key.
Because I think there was talk of Buffalo.
But Buffalo is much closer than Arizona.
No, don't disagree with me. Yeah. But if you're J.J. Watt, was he 31? You know,
go warm.
I mean, because you're already in Houston. You're playing
Houston,
in a dome.
Yeah.
You know, I know you're from a cold weather state, Wisconsin, but, you know, your body, look, Tom Brady. Tom Brady played in New England for 20 years. You get down to Tampa, you know, it's warm. He likes it down. He likes being able to wake up sunny skies every day, not to worry about snow. You in Arizona, you know, you're surrounded by mountains and stuff.
You're
so
good.
Yeah, so I don't besmirch him, but one of the things we talked about the money. J.J. Watt was able to get at $15-16 million.
Surprising.
If you're Von Miller, you might be thinking, hey, okay, I can get $15-16 million.
I think now that it's seeing J.J. Watt get this, I think Von Miller's for sure. I mean, again, the biggest difference would be Von Miller was hurt all of last year. J.J. Watt was productive on a deeper inside the numbers look, but not on the surface. His five sacks aren't going to jump out at anyone. So I don't know if that's going to hurt Von Miller, him not playing all of last season.
Again, as I've said before, I believe that Von Miller is going to want to prove that he's still one of the best in the game. And teams are going to, you know, teams are going to be willing to take a chance on it because they've seen him on film and, you know, I mean.
I'd have no qualms with Kansas City bringing in Von Miller.
Yeah, but hold on. But like you said, they're going to put $6
million. Well, it depends on the money.
Yeah,
you have to do something with Frank Clark first. That's, again, my caveat would be if you somehow can get under Frank Clark, you can almost get Von Miller and Justin Houston back in Kansas City for a similar price tag.
I don't know about Justin Houston. I mean,
he's been. I don't want to say great, but he's been very above average the past two seasons. He's been very solid.
Stay healthy.
And he has been. He's been healthy.
Yeah. He's been, I mean, that, but that's key. I mean, the last 2 years here in Kansas City, you know.
Nothing.
He and D. And look, we don't even talk about D. Ford.
He who shall not be named D. Ford. We don't even go there.
You know, the 49ers are trying to figure out a way to get out from anything, and they can't.
Good job, Kansas City, there. I do want to talk, since we don't have a ton of time left today, about Hunter Dozier and his new contract extension.
Yeah.
Hunter Dozier, the full terms came out on his extension. It's first year. $2.25 million, second year, $4.5 million, third year, $7.25 million, and then fourth year, $9 million, with a fifth-year option, club option, which is good for Kansas City, for $10 million, or $1 million buyout. So basically, it's a four-year, $25 million contract for Hunter Dozier. I think this is the right move.
It's not an Alex Gordon contract.
No, it's not at all.
It's great.
Well, and the thing with this is, when you're bringing him in now, you bought out 2 years of arbitration and then 2 years of free agency. You don't have to deal with this. For Kansas City, they're buying low because if Hunter Dozier breaks out this year, he would have gotten a lot larger contract. I think it's fair for both parties where Hunter Dozier's been really good for 1 year. He's been okay for parts of others, and then he's also been hurt a decent amount of time. This gives him some security and gives Kansas City the leeway where if Hunter Dozier breaks out and that 1 year wasn't a fluke, they got a very under-market deal for a very good, versatile player.
But again, that's why I say shout out to Dayton Moore. I mean, he knows what he's doing. And the money that John Sherman is letting him spend, again, maybe I'm expecting a lot more than you out of the Royals this season. You know, and it's interesting because I get all the emails from the Royals. They say per club policy, terms of the deals were not disclosed, but then you just read off the terms of the deals.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how it gets out. But, you know what?
Per Alex Lewis. And I trust Alec Lewis a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he was on the
show. He was actually on the show, yeah.
He was on the call today. But, again, you know, he played, 44 games last year? In 2019, he hit 26 home runs, 29 doubles, 84 RBIs. I mean, that's pretty good. And he led the, you know, he tied for the league lead and with 10 triples.
Yeah.
So what he's able to do, and again, you're putting him along with other pieces out there and collectively that I got to say, Sterling, even though I didn't get a chance to see the game yesterday because I was trying to recover from getting my COVID shot, I'm excited about what the Royals are going to put out there on the field this year. Like, I really can't wait. I know they're beating Cleveland right now 4-2, and they won yesterday's game. I mean, I really cannot wait till opening day, or you know, however they're going to do for us here with the media. If they do it like they did last year, I'm going to be going to a lot of games this year because I'm going to be going this year. But man, the Royals. They're making me excited. They're making you almost forget about what happened to the Chiefs in Tampa just last month, and trust me, that still leaves a sore spot for me right now. But the fact that the Royals are putting some out there, Kansas City is real for again. I don't fancy myself to be a fan of the Chiefs overall because of you know covering them, and I cover the Royals as well. Grew up a baseball fan, but. But I do like the moves because it's hard. It is hard to watch your home team lose constantly, you know, and lose, you know, games that you feel like they should win, that they're leading and then somehow find a way to blow a lead, you know, and you're thinking, okay, are you trying to capitalize on getting picks? And then, of course, those picks won't turn out. Like, they're not going to come and play next year like they would NBA, NFL or something. They're not going to turn around.
You've got to wait a few years.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, I'm in the win now type thing, or at least try to put effort out there, and that's what they're doing, man. You know, and if it you know, unfortunately it took maybe to get a new owner who wasn't afraid to open up his wallet because again, he's got to pay whether or not fans are in attendance or concessions and stuff being so that money's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's you know, because he was with the Cleveland organization, he knows what it's like. And saw what that saw how that franchise was ran, of course he was a part owner up there as well. So he knows he's got baseball in his blood. So I'm just overly excited, man. I mean I'm ready for the season to start.
I am too. And the thing with this is it's not like Kansas City went out and the one caveat I'll say is they've done some good moves. Carlos Santana, Mike Minor, this re-signing of Hunter Dozier. The Benintendi was fantastic. I'll give all the credit in the world for that Benintendi move. But it's not like we brought in Trevor Bauer. They didn't go out and even get a Corey Kluber. They went with some mid-level, hoping guys are going to bounce back signings. That is still a lot better than we've seen in the past. These small market teams like Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Oakland, it's very tough. It's very tough. New York, I mean, look at the Dodgers. They can just go out and throw money around. San Diego, even though they're somewhat small market, they have so much money to throw around. Kansas City is doing this, and they're doing it in the best way that they possibly can. And that is with these mid-major, hoping guys bounce back signings, because eventually some of them are going to stick. This bullpen looks very good. These young guys, it looks like they drafted very well pitcher on the pitcher side of things. The batters, that's a whole other story that we don't have time to get into today. But just to me, the excitement is there's still so much young growth happening around here. Chris Bubich, Brady Singer, Asa Lacy. Bobby Witt Jr. is playing in spring training and looks like a stud. If he's ripping the ball, you're sitting here going, is he going to get called up this year? I mean, we didn't think Brady Singer was going to play last year because if you can hold him down for 1 year, you get to hold him later, or even if it's only like 10 games, how the arbitration works, you actually get to keep an extra year because baseball's kind of messed up.
It is.
I mean, that's the whole Chris Bryant scenario out there with the Cubs. Dayton Moore's not afraid to bring them up now to lose a year later on to see if they can compete. And that's, I think, more fun as a fan, getting to see these young guys come up when they're ready instead of holding on to see what happens a year down the road.
Well, here's the thing. It's always better to bring them up a year too early versus a year too late. And so I like it. I don't have a problem with it. I'm of the old adage, you don't know what you got until you put them in that position to see what they can do. And a lot of times players, you know, they feel like they may never get a chance to make it to the big leagues. Then you give them the opportunity, and then with Merriweather.
Mayfield.
Well, that's all I'm saying.
Floyd Mayweather.
No. But
starting at second base.
Yeah, Whitfield. Anyway, I never forget
Merrifield.
Yeah, see, throwing me off with these names. But anyway, you know, they brought him up, and, you know, he exploded. I mean, he never went back down. So I'm saying, you give him an opportunity, and you put him in a position where they can succeed like they did with Witt, you know, then you never know. I mean, you find somebody who can be key to the success of the ball club going further.
Yeah. We do have to take a quick break. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. I had to. Every first of the month,
you gotta
play Bone Thugs and Harmony.
You getting arguments with me on that?
I don't make the rules.
No.
I just enforce
it. It's the first of the month. You got to do it. I tell you this, though, man. As I mentioned earlier about getting got my COVID shot. If you still haven't had a chance to do it, and other people, if you do get a chance, please go get it done.
Dude, I can't for like three years.
Huh?
Dude, I'm 26. I am so far down the list of COVID vaccine recipients.
I wasn't even on the list. I got called in because people who were on a list didn't show up. And because of that, you know, they can't, you have to utilize those vials you know, ASAP. So initially, I think it was Friday, I was told to come down. I got a call. It was right after we got off the air. I was going down and they said, well, you know, you're a little late, but come tomorrow, 3:00. So I'm getting ready to, you know, I had a Zoom call at 11 o'clock. And they called me like 10:48. Hey, can you come down sooner? I was like, well, let me just get through, you know, doing the Zoom and I'll come down. And I got a shot. And who was there with me? Jerron Rush. He used to play for Pembroke and, of course, UCLA. So, yeah, we got our COVID shots and we got to come back a month later. But again, I think it's worth it, people, you know.
That's awesome.
I ain't going to lie, my arm is sore. Ooh, it is sore. But, you know, not that I hadn't had COVID at all yet, and I've tested negative each time I've gone out and done a COVID test, but better be safe than sorry.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Glad you got that done.
Yeah.
We only got about a minute and a half left today, and one thing I know we both wanted to talk about was the beatdown the Jayhawks put on Baylor. Baylor, we went into this week going, this is a win-win situation for Kansas because if they lose, oh, that's okay. You lost to the, you know, second best team, or some say best team in college basketball, but you beat them. KU is skyrocketing right now. I think this is huge for Kansas and their March Madness seeding.
It first of all, and we just coming across the thing, Lloyd Pierce, the Atlanta Hawks, just fired him after 34 games this year. The Atlanta Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce was fired. But if you're KU, it makes you wonder, where's this KU been all year?
They're peaking at the right time. They're Baylor's kryptonite. Baylor's like what? Like one in – I don't even know what the record is. They won like one game in Allen Fieldhouse since Bill Self's been there. It's ridiculous.
But you know what's going to happen. Baylor's going to get their revenge in the Big 12 tournament if possible. So
doesn't matter. I mean, I'm just saying for Kansas, this is very good for their seeding.
Yeah, KU plays another game this weekend, and next week is the start of the Big 12 tournament. So looking forward to that. Sterling, glad to be back in studio. I will probably be doing the show from the house tomorrow. But I try to be a man of my word. Want to come in studio, so well, I'll let you take us off.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thank you, Darren, for coming in today, gracing us with your presence.
Facts.
This was Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. We'll be back tomorrow right here, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. We are out.